Penguin Random House Audio presents Mott Street, a Chinese-American family's story of exclusion and homecoming. This is the author, Ava Chin. For May. Let the Chinaman come. He will give us the benefit of his skill. Frederick Douglass, The Composite Nation, 1869. No greater calamity could now befall the United States than to have the Pacific slope fill up with a Mongolian population. Theodore Roosevelt, 1882. After many amazing adventures, he had become a merchant in a city called Mott Street. Lee Chu, with Joseph Singleton, Biography of a Chinaman, 1903. And tell me what street compares with Mott Street in July. Rogers and Hart, Manhattan, 1925. Author's note. First, a note on names. No identities or names have been changed, apart from some minor spelling adjustments from Chinese into English. Whenever possible, I use the individual's preferred spelling, and in cases where names changed across lifetimes, American names, nicknames, baby names, milk names, and names acquired with marriage, I chose the one that was most commonly used. The languages and dialects spoken by the majority of Chinese in America, including my family members, during these time periods were Cantonese, Guangdonghua, and Toisanese, Huaisanhua, often colloquially referred to as Samyup, three counties, and Seiyup, four counties. As there is no commonly agreed upon standardization for these equivalent to Mandarin's pinyin, and given that this work is rooted in an oral tradition, I have used a combination of transliteration systems, Yutping, Yale, etc., modulated by how it sounds to my own ear. There are exceptions for commonly used proper nouns like Peking and Huangdi. Over the course of my research, I navigated various languages and dialects with the help of others, and when I couldn't understand something, I continued to observe and to take in new information. I did this in our ancestral villages in China, where folks welcomed my friends and me into their homes, and over cups of tea shared with us their memories of my family. I did this as I joined the various family and veterans associations in Chinatown that my relatives belonged to, some of which only a decade or two before had been closed to women. I interviewed folks who had known my family in these spaces, asking questions over the click of mahjong tiles shuffled across tabletops. Other times, gathering in members-only family association rooms to bow before the altars of our common ancestors with offerings of incense, rice wine, and intention. Performing three deep bows under a pressed tin ceiling, just like my grandfather had done in that very room when he arrived in New York City in the late 19th century. As much as I could, I allowed the family stories to lead the way down a cavernous tunnel, the voice of the original speaker echoing before me. But ultimately, I had to make a choice. Whose story was this anyway? The people who lived it, or my own, and that of my daughters and the future generations? Since I was not present or even born when most of the folks I've written about were alive, I built dialogue based on what surviving family members remembered in retrospect, told from their points of view, and what I could surmise from my own vantage point. Sometimes I had to imagine their conversations, their multitude of voices clamoring to be heard, with all of their local color and multilingualism. Whenever possible, I cross-referenced these stories against the written record, but often the written record itself had to be approached skeptically, especially when 19th century anti-Chinese bias was outright blinding, a real lesson in reading against the grain. The deeper that I delved into this rich, loamy terroir, the more I realized that I was writing a narrative that was part ghost book. As I entered my ancestors' world on Mott Street, their spirits began speaking to me, leaving a trail of breadcrumbs to the story, materializing as letters, notes, even a sealed chop bearing my Qin grandfather's name. My family is a noisy, bothersome bunch, bursting through the walls and hallways as I try to doze, talking to me through the memories of old friends, eyes brimming with recollection like a teacup about to overflow, egging me on to continue, write faster, what are you waiting for? Even daring to show up on the sofa like one great-grandmother, demanding to be heard. Part 1, 1970s to present. Chapter 1, The Elbow of Mott Street, Chinatown, New York City. As I walk past the restaurants, vegetable stands, and open-air shop fronts that line Mott Street, the main artery that pulses through the heart of Chinatown, the sights and smells here are as familiar to me as my grandparents' kitchen. Roast duck and slabs of salted pork, vast bins of varying grades of dried shiitakes, baby shrimp, flower teas wrapped in cellophane packages, plump dried oysters plucked from their shells and naked, but for some black bearding and a spray of salt, so provocatively laid out that it almost hurts to look at them. When I was a kid growing up in Flushing, Queens, before it became the new Chinatown, we used to come here nearly every week. Sometimes it was to see my grandmother Rose's family, or to go shopping for roast pork or Chinese beef jerky, items difficult to make at home. It always involved good food. Giant, elaborate meals of long pan-fried egg noodles with sliced beef, chicken, pork, and verdant gailan vegetables as long as my chopsticks. Lobster Cantonese with minced pork and lacy egg whites. A whole flounder steamed from head to tail, topped with a medley of ginger, scallions, and soy sauce, right before we devoured it down to the delicate skeleton when it was time to flip it over and start again. Chinatown was where my maternal grandfather, Gene Wong, went on his days off to visit friends, place horse racing bets at the local off-track betting office, and purchase in-season crabs or lobster. The smaller, younger female crustaceans were our favorite, tender, succulent, and if we were lucky, packed with rich, unctuous eggs. I didn't know on any of the innumerable weekend excursions we took here that a whole other side of my family, one that I'd never met, was just around the corner from our favorite Cantonese restaurant. They were there, even as we marveled at the tiny turtles or Mexican jumping beans, or sucked on sweet hawthorn berry candies or preserved plums from the Hong Kong sweet shops with a Japanese name, or tossed white gunpowder-filled pellets to make snapping noises against the pavement. If I had looked up, perhaps I would have seen them residing right there in the elbow of Mott Street, 37 Mott Street, an apartment building that had been the epicenter of the Chinese community for almost 75 years. Built in 1915, after a fire destroyed a funeral parlor and a stable, the red brick building that locals called Sun Lao, or New Building, was considered the height of luxury when it rose from the ashes. The most prominent families of Chinatown flocked to live there, including members of both my maternal and paternal sides. There, they occupied the choicest apartments with views of the cross-section of Mott and Pell Streets. It's a bustling, three-pronged, panoramic view here at the intersection of Mott Street and Pell, and this is where our family story in New York begins. So many generations of my family have lived in this building. Great-grandparents, grandparents and their siblings, parents, uncles, aunts, cousins, and now me. When I last counted, I tallied 49 chins and ngdoshims in total, many of whom took their first breaths as wailing newborns here. Each wing of the family can trace its lineage back to an ancestor born and raised in the same fertile Pearl River Delta, an ocean and a continent away. Although each of them had lived out west collectively through the eras of Lincoln, Grant, Harrison, and Cleveland, it would take decades for their descendants to settle some 3,000 miles away in the apartment building that stood at the heart of the community they called Tongyong Gai. It was here on Tong People Street that their descendants became neighbors, lovers, classmates, sworn enemies, and eventually, as fate would have.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?